राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वाला भागिनी वरधारी, गोपी जन वाला भागिनी वरधारी, यशोदानंदन व्रज जनरंजन, यशोदानंदन व्रज जनरंजन,
everyone. It's so wonderful to be here with all of you. It's a real joy and an honor. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're continuing the chapter entitled Vidura Approaches Maitreya, and we're on text number 10. So The Srimad Bhagavatam is full of sweetness, but sometimes you get an extra sweet verse. And I think today is one of those. I was really grateful to have this verse to meditate on. It's just very, very sweet, meditating on Krishna. So as you can recall, there Uddhava is following, he's actually speaking these verses. And he was saying that there was a friction between Krishna's family members, which ended that dynasty, right? And Krishna had told him, had told Uddhava to go to Badrikashram, where he could get the association of the devotees of Nara Narayan. But Uddhava was so attached to Krishna that he found it impossible to bear his separation. And so he followed after Krishna, trying to find where he was. And then there was that beautiful description of Krishna sitting on the banks of the river Sarasvati, and Uddhava is watching, right, as he's walking closer. He sees Krishna sitting there with one leg lifted. It says here, his right lotus foot was on his left thigh, and although he had left all household comforts, he looked quite cheerful in that posture. So he was leaning against a banyan tree. So Uddhava came across him in that way, and Krishna's sitting there. So that's where we're leading up to today. And Maitreya Muni also arrived. In yesterday's verse, we heard that Maitreya, who was a great devotee of the Lord and a friend and well-wisher of the sage Dvaipana Vyas, had reached that spot too, right there. So Uddhava's arriving, Maitreya's arriving, and they're there to see Krishna. So today's verse, we'll continue that description. Tasya nuraktasya munir mukunda. Pramoda bhava natakanda rasya. Ashrinvato ma manuraga hasa. Samikshaya Vishramayanuvacha. Tasya nuraktasya munir mukunda. Pramoda bhavanata kandarasya. Ashrinvato ma manuraga hasa. Samikshaya Vishramayanuvacha. Please chant.
Samikshaya Vishramayanuvacha.
Thank you. So let's do the word for word together. Tasya. We can say it all together. Tasya, his, Maitreya's. Anuraktasya. Although, I Krishna asked we say it together, so if you'd like to, we can just read it together. Okay. Anuraktasya. Although attached. Mune. Of the sage. Mukunda. The Lord who awards salvation. Pramoda Bhava. In a pleasing attitude. Anatta. Lowered. Kandarasya. Of the shoulder. Ashrinvata. While thus hearing. Mam. Unto me. Anuragahasa. With kind smiling. Samikshaya. Particularly seeing me. Vishramayan. Allowing me complete rest. Uvacha. Said. So translation. Maitreya Muni was greatly attached to him, the Lord, and he was listening in a pleasing attitude with his shoulder lowered, with a smile and a particular glance upon me, having allowed me to rest, the Lord spoke as follows. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Although both Uddhava and Maitreya were great souls, the Lord's attention was more on Uddhava because he was a spotlessly pure devotee. A jnana bhakta, or one whose devotion is mixed with the monistic viewpoint, is not a pure devotee. Although Maitreya was a devotee, his devotion was mixed. The Lord reciprocates with his devotees on the basis of transcendental love, and not on the basis of philosophical knowledge or fruit of activities. In the transcendental loving service of the Lord, there is no place for monistic knowledge or fruit of activities. The gopis in Vrindavan were neither highly learned scholars nor mystic yogis. They had spontaneous love for the Lord, and thus he became their heart and soul. And the gopis also became the heart and soul of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya approved the relationship of the gopis with the Lord as supreme. Herein, the Lord's attitude towards Uddhava was more intimate than with Maitreya Muni. I'll read the translation one more time. Maitreya Muni was greatly attached to him, the Lord, and he was listening in a pleasing attitude with his shoulder lowered, with a smile and a particular glance upon me, having allowed me to rest. The Lord spoke as follows. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilipanyena Tasmai Shri Guruvya Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pshadaya Vitalahi Shmati Bhakti Varanda Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharya Hiya Vishesha Shinivari Pashtatadi Shitarni Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So there's this really sweet moment happening here, and I want to describe in today's class, I want to discuss about reciprocation and also Krishna's special way of reciprocating. It goes beyond just normal reciprocation through his being able to simultaneously and uniquely reciprocate with each person. And then finally, I want to discuss this part of the verse where Krishna's, he has a particular glance upon Uddhava. And we'll talk about Krishna's glance. So, first, we're having here two different devotees of Krishna. They're both meeting him here in this location. And the description is given that Maitreya Muni, he's very gentle, he's sitting there, he's has his shoulder lowered, kind of in that humble mood, you know, and he was listening in a pleasing attitude. And then we have Uddhava, who's also arrived, and Krishna's given him some time and space to rest. It's described, he's allowed me to rest. And Krishna looks over at him and glances at him, so, and smiles. So that's the description. So Krishna is, in the purport, Prabhupada's describing that Krishna reciprocates according to how we approach him and the mood that we have towards him. So Uddhava was very dear and very intimate to Krishna, and therefore there was an extra sweet exchange happening there. Maitreya Muni was also dear to Krishna and very attached to Krishna, but he had his particular mood in way of practicing spiritual life that was mixed with jnana. And so his devotion, Prabhupada was saying, his devotion was mixed. Therefore, the relationship and the way that he received reciprocation from Krishna was unique to him. So Krishna actually reciprocates with each one of us according to how we want to feel his relation, how we want that relationship to be. He's very personal. And yesterday we heard Krishna Abhishek Prabhu mentioned that he was asking the children questions, and he said that you can't force someone to be your friend, right? So if someone, like, if they're your friend, it's wonderful, but you can't make someone your friend. So similarly, in a spiritual sense, Krishna doesn't force himself on anyone. He wants to be our friend, and he also wants to respect how we want him. So he's very attentive to our desire of connection. Sometimes, you know, in our own experience in this world, you know, sometimes in spiritual life we have to come up with an analogy to help ourselves, because these concepts of Krishna and his devotees, it's way beyond anything that we've seen in this world. But the beauty of analogy is it gives us a little glimpse into that. So when we think about our own lives and we think about relationships, it's natural that we want to reciprocate with and be involved with someone who's also interested in us, right? It's kind of a natural human characteristic. And even we'll see that in families, if there's, you know, we have ability to love many people, but if there is one family member who's particularly gravitating towards us and particularly loves being with us and calls us and wants, you know, wants to spend time with us, or a friend, then naturally our heart wants to reciprocate and we reach out more and we also take part in that relationship to that degree. So although this analogy is limited, being in the material world in that context, it gives us a glimpse into the Supreme Person, Krishna. And although he's very different from us, we can understand that there's some similarity in the way that he's a person too. He's a Supreme Person, but he's also a person, and he doesn't force himself on anyone. So here he's specifically relating to each one of these two devotees in their unique way, in the way that they feel fully complete with Krishna, fully at home. One other point to note here is there's no jealousy between the devotees of Krishna. So we have Maitreya here, and we have Uddhava, and they're both experiencing Krishna in a unique way. They're feeling reciprocation. In the next few verses, Krishna starts speaking to Uddhava, but there's no description that Maitreya gets jealous, like, oh, why is he speaking to Uddhava, right? Oh, I wish he was speaking to me. So that's another lesson for us to notice that the mood of the devotees is so magnanimous. They're also tapping into Krishna's mood of magnanimity. Krishna's able to reciprocate with so many souls, and the devotees also are in that same mood. Yes, let Krishna have this loving exchange with this devotee. Let him reciprocate with that devotee, and they'd get joy seeing Krishna reciprocate with others, while at the same time feeling complete in their own relationship with Krishna. So Maitreya is not sitting there thinking, oh, how come Krishna's not really, you know, in the coming verses, he's not, you could say Krishna's directing his attention at Uddhava, but Maitreya is still feeling complete and satisfied. We have that description of Krishna in the Rasa dance, where he was dancing with each gopi, and every single gopi felt complete and felt like Krishna was personally exchanging with her, dancing with her. Not they just felt it, they actually were. They actually were dancing with Krishna, each one of them. And when the coward boys would sit around Krishna for a meal, they would all be feeling that Krishna is sitting right by them. They're all exchanging with him. They're all so there was no, there's no distance ever. If Krishna's focusing his attention on one devotee, the other devotees aren't feeling separated in that way. They're not feeling distant. They're feeling very close to Krishna as well. So the unique way that Krishna reciprocates goes beyond anything we've experienced in this world. He's able to reciprocate simultaneously with every living entity. And not only that, it's not a carbon copy way of reciprocating. It's a unique, personal, intimate, loving way of reciprocating. So that's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is so wonderful. It's actually inconceivable how he can be so personal with unlimited living entities. So when we're all gathered in the temple, or when we're at a big event, like the Festival of the Holy Name, or if we're in Vrindavan and we're part of a group of thousands of devotees, I'm sure you've all been in a situation where you're, there's a huge crowd of spirit souls that are all looking at Krishna and all chanting for him, right? And we might feel like, wow, we're one in a tiny, tiny little jiva in a crowd. That kind of doubt can come up. Like, why do I even matter to Krishna? I'm just one of, you know, thousands of people here. But Krishna is, he's not limited in our, in the way that we are. We get limited by numbers, right? We get overwhelmed if we have, you know, more than, I think the number of friends anybody can, like close intimate friends, is probably a handful or two that you can keep up with on a regular basis. But and then we have our, you know, secondary, and then our, you know, we kind of have our wider community. But the very intimate friends, we're very limited with our time and resources and our energy. But Krishna is not limited in that way. So even if there's a huge crowd, even if we're at the back of the crowd in the Krishna Balaramandir and it's packed full of devotees, he's still seeing us. He's not limited by people blocking him either, like we are. Like, oh, I can't see someone in the crowd. Oh, they're way back there. Hello, you know, raise your hand. Like, try to connect with them. But Krishna can see each one of us because he's with us in our heart. So we can meditate on that. How is Krishna uniquely reciprocating with me, and how moving that is, that he actually cares about each one of us and our journey to him. So we read in the Ishopanishad how there's that verse in the beginning, Om Purnam Ada Apurnam Idam, Purnat Purnam Idam, Purnat Purnam Jagapate. Yes. Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate. Right? So the verse is describing how even though Krishna is, he's simultaneously everywhere, and then yet he's complete in himself. So he's manifesting, the description is that Krishna is manifesting in so many different avatars in so many different forms, and yet he's complete within himself. He's never divided. So in our world, if we're giving attention to one person, we can't also give attention to someone else, because that's divided attention, right? We get divided. Krishna can manifest in so many forms, and each one of those forms is fully whole and complete. And yet Krishna, the originator of all those forms, is also fully complete. So if I was to take this like piece of paper, and I was to tear it up into many pieces and give each one of you a piece, that paper would no longer be whole and complete. But the spiritual experience is with Krishna is that he's giving a piece of himself to every person, but he remains full and complete. So that's why it's inconceivable for us in the material context. So there's a particular way that Krishna is reciprocating here with Uddhava, and it's about smiling and glancing at him. So one of the ways that Krishna reciprocates, I was mentioning these two qualities of reciprocation, simultaneous and unique. So simultaneously with everyone, and yet uniquely with everyone. So with the glance, let's think about the glance of Krishna. Here in this particular pastime, he's glancing at Uddhava. But Krishna can simultaneously glance at unlimited living entities. One summer, I was actually volunteering at the Palace of Gold, Prabhupada's Palace of Gold in New Vrindavan. And there's a beautiful painting of Krishna, Damodar, with the butter pot in that room, Prabhupada's little bedroom. It was intended to be his bedroom. And that painting hangs over the bed. And so when we're bringing the tourists are coming to see this place, usually the tour guide will say, note how in this image, Krishna, no matter where you stand in the room, Krishna looks like he's looking at you, because it's a special painting that no matter where you stand, every person in the room that's on that tour will feel like, wow, the painting's looking right at me, Krishna's looking right at me. So that's the nature of Krishna. He can simultaneously glance at so many people, unlimited. And yet, there's this phrase in the verse here, Samikshaya, particularly seeing me. So a particular glance. And particular, I looked it up actually, because sometimes it helps me just to look up a word I hear a lot just to see. Okay, so particular, the definition of it is it's used to single out an individual member of a specified group or class, particularly at you, right? Particular. So it's used to single out a particular. Another definition is especially great or intense. So a particular type of love, a particular kind of connection has a sort of intensity to it, a special greatness to it. So Krishna here is with a smile and a particular glance at Uddhava. He spoke as follows. So particular. Here Uddhava is, and there's others around, but he's having a particular glance at him. So again, we're reminded that Krishna is very intimate and very personal, and he's uniquely reciprocating with Uddhava. So the glance. In the material world, a glance, again, I looked up the definition, a glance. A glance is just a brief and hurried look. That's the material definition. That's the dictionary definition. To take a brief or hurried look. So in our world, a glance is usually not that consequential. Someone will be walking into a room and they're trying to get their bearings and they'll glance around, right, trying to find where I can sit. Or they'll glance at somebody and usually it's just kind of a fleeting, temporary thing. Sometimes it can be a little bit more. It can be there's an event, maybe a gathering, and one friend will glance over at us and there's kind of a connection in that glance, right? Like, oh, there's just, it's brief, but there's something that, an exchange that happened there where you feel like that connection. But the thing with material glances, even if it's a sweet kind and it's like the love of a parent glancing at the child or, love of different relationships, it's still temporary, the glance. It doesn't have a very lasting effect. What happens in, maybe you've experienced this, sometimes let's say you're visiting a friend or a relative, and then you're saying goodbye, there's that goodbye moment, whether it's at your driveway or in the airport, and you're saying goodbye, and then usually the person who's leaving, let's say you're walking into the airport doors, right, and they're waiting at the car and they're saying goodbye, and then you turn back around for one more glance, right, one more look, but they've already buried their head into their phone, right? There's a particular kind of, like, disappointment in that moment when you're hoping for one more glance, right, one more connection, and the other person has already kind of disconnected and gone on to their life. So that's the nature of this world. Everyone has to go on to the next thing, and it doesn't last. It doesn't stay. It's not a permanent impression. And even if we had an amazing, wonderful glance of someone that we, reflect on over the years, like, there was that loved one and our first glance and that kind of experience. Even that, the memory of that fades with time. So that's the material glance. So let's contrast that with the glance of God. What does that look like? The glance of God. It's not fleeting and it's not temporary. It might be brief, but it has a permanent and lasting and eternal transformative effect on the spirit soul. Basically, Krishna, anything to do with Krishna, his smile, his glance, his dress, his name, his form, his pastimes, all of them are non-different from Krishna. Therefore, when he glances upon the living entity, they are directly receiving Krishna into their consciousness, into their heart. And can you imagine, like, directly receiving Krishna, that there's no way that that can go by without some transformative effect? So I'd like to describe the different characteristics of Krishna's glance. First of all, in just a neutral sense, in Krishna's, the power of Krishna's glance, not necessarily in an intimate relationship with his devotees, but just the power of his glance as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We hear how his glance is so powerful that it creates this entire material creation. It gets it started. He just glances over and the material creation starts acting up. Just like it's described, actually Prabhupada, in one of the purports in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, he uses this nice phrase. He says, when the Lord throws his transcendental glance over the material nature, then only can the material nature act, as a father contacts the mother, who is then able to conceive a child. So I like this phrase, throws his transcendental glance, he throws it at material nature, and then everything begins, this whole material creation with all of its automatic processes of karma and reincarnation, all the things that happen here, right? All the living entities are put here and they're all living their journeys here. So what an incredible power in Krishna's glance. So that's just from a more formal sense. We're talking about Krishna when he's in his formal role, just as the creator and manifester. But let's look at the glance of Krishna when he's in an intimate space with his devotees. How does that look? So one of the descriptions, one of the characteristics of the glance is that it adds to Krishna's beauty. It's part of his beauty, actually. It's one of the characteristics of his beauty. And there's a beautiful verse in the fourth canto. The Lord is super excellently beautiful on account of his open and merciful smile and his sidelong glance upon his devotees. So that's part of the description. So I'll read it again. The Lord is super excellently beautiful on account of his open and merciful smile and his sidelong glance upon his devotees. So that's another phrase we hear often when we're reading scripture, is sidelong glance. Not just a glance, but a sidelong glance. Sidelong, right? It's long because it's coming from the side, so you have to kind of look long that way. You know, strain your eyes almost like sidelong. And it feels extra intimate, right? It feels extra close, sidelong. Like someone's, because there's a knowing in that glance, like, oh yeah, we're sidelong glancing each other, and there's a knowing, a connection that's being amplified by that sidelong glance. So it's extra sweet. And Krishna, all the gopis are waiting and for Krishna to return from the forest. He's looking at them sidelong, right? Sidelong glances at them. And they're feeling complete in that, those smiles and glances of Krishna. The next thing about his glance is that it's filled with love. And in another part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where the pastime of Lord Varaha, the appearance of Lord Varaha, there is a verse where Varaha is listening to the words and the prayers of Lord Brahma. He says, so Brahma has finished his prayers, and then the verse says, Varaha, after hearing the words of Brahma, which were free from all sinful purposes and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. That's another beautiful expression, a description of Krishna. A glance laden with love. So these are things we can meditate on when we're looking at the beautiful deity form of Krishna, or when we're meditating in our heart on the form of Krishna, how he has a glance laden with love, and he's ready to offer that to us. His love for us is there, and he's ready to glance at us in that way, if that's what we want. So another characteristic of his glance is it's laden with compassion. It's filled with compassion. And for this one, I was reading a verse in the third canto, text chapter 28, text 31. This is a famous verse, and it's a very beautiful verse, Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's in the canto we're reading now, so in a few weeks or months we're going to come across this verse. The verse says, the yogis should contemplate with full devotion the compassionate glances frequently cast by the Lord's eyes, for they soothe the most fearful threefold agonies of his devotees. His glances, accompanied by loving smiles, are full of abundant grace. So again, we have some phrases here. I'll just read this again because it's so sweet. The yogis, meaning the devotees of Krishna too, right? All of us, bhakti yogis, should contemplate with full devotion the compassionate glances frequently cast by the Lord's eyes, for they soothe the most fearful threefold agonies of his devotees. His glances, accompanied by loving smiles, are full of abundant grace. So two times in that verse, there's compassion mentioned and abundant grace, which is the same idea. Abundant grace means compassion, right? Empathy, care, wanting to soothe others, right? So this is the description of his glances. It's full of compassion for his devotees. So that's another way we can meditate on Krishna's glance. To remember that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is compassionate, filled with compassion for us in our journey towards him. And his glance upon us can soothe the distress of this world. So we've all been distressed and we all need something in those moments, right? We have our go-to things that comfort us, our comfort blankets, so to speak. But one of our main spiritual comfort blanket can be to remember Krishna's glance is filled with compassion. And he cares about me right now while I'm going through this difficult time. And just to remember his beautiful smile and his glance will soothe that distress or feeling. Have you ever been in that situation where you've been feeling really distressed and sad or disappointed or grief-stricken, and then you look at the deity of the Lord and you're thinking, wow, Krishna's still smiling. Somehow I'm just filled with such serious and kind of dark like thoughts and feelings right now, but somehow this must not be that important because somehow Krishna's still smiling. There must be something beyond this. And especially Lord Jagannath, right? His smile is so big and he's always glancing at all of his devotees with big eyes. He doesn't even blink. His eyes are so big and constant. He's always looking at each devotee. I had that experience actually in Radhadesh. I was recently in Radhadesh in Belgium. And it was just, you know, sometimes Krishna gives us a little realization that it seems so simple, but it can really transform the way that we move forward. And it was just a realization because Jagannath is there on their altar, and Jagannath, Baladeva, and Subhadra. And one day when I was chanting, I just thought, wow, Jagannath's eyes, they never blink. They're always looking. He's looking at me. Oh my goodness, he actually cares about it. It was like this moment of realization that he's constantly looking. It's not that he looks away. He's there and he's available. And his gaze upon us is available for each one of us. So if we're ever feeling, this is another thing that can happen in life. Sometimes we can feel lonely. And if we feel like, oh, people, no one's seen what I do, right? No one sees all the service I'm doing behind the scenes. Or no one knows the troubles I've been through, right? There's that song. No one knows the troubles I've gone through, right? That song. So yeah, there's that common theme in this material world that we feel lonely and isolated with our problems. So if we remember the glance, the gaze of Lord Jagannath, he's available and looking at us, and he doesn't stop looking. He's there, and we can remember he's seeing everything that we do. Even if I'm feeling unseen by others, I can drink in that experience of being seen by God. His glance can purify and relieve all that turmoil of needing to be seen or validated or approved of by others. So that's the power of Krishna's glance. So another thing about Krishna's glance is that it brings joy to his devotees. And again, I wanted to share a verse that talks about that, and it was also in the context of Lord Varaha, Varahadeva. So the gigantic feature of the boar was certainly very fearful for all the non-devotees, but to the pure devotees of the Lord, Hari. Oh, sorry, of the Lord. Pure devotees of the Lord. He was not at all fearful. On the contrary, he was so pleasingly glancing upon his devotees that all of them felt transcendental happiness. So there's a boar incarnation of the Lord. Usually when we think of the boar, we think about a boar out in the world, we don't think of it as being a very pleasing form or like a joy-inducing form. But here we have the supreme person who's in this form of the boar that's actually so huge, just like we heard descriptions of Lord Sringadev, it was so giant, right? And created fear in many people. So Lord Varaha created fear in all the non-devotees, but the devotees were not afraid. Instead, they were feeling joy seeing the pleasingly glancing, how he was pleasingly glancing upon them. So Krishna was pleasingly glancing upon them. So also, we all know that experience. This is also something we can relate to our lives when we're dancing in kirtan, and especially with the deity form of the Lord, because it's so, Krishna draws us in that way. We can use our eyes to connect with Krishna, right? So when we're dancing in kirtan, we're seeing his beautiful smile, and we feel like, oh, Krishna, he's reciprocating with me, and he's looking at me. Then we feel that joy that comes naturally. So the glance of Krishna creates joy in his devotees. And then finally, the glance of Krishna is eternally transformative. So it's not like the glance of this world that's fleeting, temporary, and yeah, maybe it touched someone, but it didn't really do much. The glance of Krishna eternally transforms our journey of spiritual life, and it pulls us toward him, even brief as it is, right? A glance is, the definition of a glance is it's brief. Krishna briefly looks at us, and it completely transforms our spiritual life. And the verse that I thought of for this one is that description of Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says, "My dear friend, if you are indeed attached to your worldly friends, don't look at the smiling face of Lord Govinda as he stands on the bank of the Yamuna at Keshigat. Casting sidelong glances, he places his flute to his lips, which seem like newly blossomed twigs. His transcendental body bending in three places appears very bright in the moonlight." So don't look at that, because then you're going to lose everything material, because you're going to be so drawn in, pulled in by that beautiful glance, the sidelong glances and smile of Krishna. So the other way to understand that is that just by looking over at that description he's giving of Krishna standing there, we're going to completely change. Everything we thought was important before is no longer going to be important. That's how powerful and how transformative it is to catch sight of Krishna's glance, especially if he's glancing at us, right? So Rupa Goswami, in this kind of humorous way, he's giving a warning. Okay, be careful if you're attached to things that you think are very important to you, your life here in this world, then don't look over there, because that's going to change you forever. So one of the ways that we experience Krishna's glance in our lives is through the glance of his pure devotees, through the glance of the spiritual master. How many of you can raise your hand, how many of you here have experienced the glance of a pure devotee that has touched you deeply and changed your life? Yeah, almost everyone, right? So I think everyone actually has experienced that, because so many times when we're hearing the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada talking about what touched them about him, many of them didn't have a one-on-one conversation, but they had a glance, perhaps, a little smile. And you'll hear devotees talking on and on about the experience of that one moment where Prabhupada looked and glanced at them. And that is enough to fuel that devotional journey for the rest of their life. That one look from Prabhupada, or any great devotee of the Lord, but particularly a spiritual master. There's a special joy that we can experience when our spiritual master glances at us. And why is that? Because the spiritual master is linking us to Krishna, and therefore, through the disciplic succession, we are getting a glimpse of Krishna's glance at us. Through that, because there's a direct connection, right? Through that lineage. Spiritual masters representing Krishna. Just like when you plug a wire into this outlet, then you're connecting automatically to the powerhouse, right? The ultimate generator of electricity. So similarly, when the spiritual master is pleased and glances at us in a pleasing way, we know for sure that Krishna is pleased, because that's coming from Krishna. Krishna is looking at us in that moment. One of the most amazing things about spiritual life is that distance doesn't mean further away. It actually can get sweeter. So if we're like here on the disciplic succession and Krishna's way over here and there's a long list, right? It doesn't mean that there's any distance. Actually, with each spiritual master in the lineage, it becomes more and more sweet. Just like we hear in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it becomes sweeter when Shukadeva Goswami speaks it, or when the parrot pecks on the fruit, it becomes sweeter. So when our spiritual masters, when our spiritual mentors, when our spiritual inspirations look over and glance at us, it can actually transform our heart in the same way that Krishna's glance can, if we're open and eager for that reciprocation. So on our end, we have to be willing and interested, and then we will feel the effect. There has to be some eagerness. In my own experience as a child, I felt very encouraged many times by simple moments of a glance by a great devotee that I was inspired by. And especially looking back at my teenage years, there was a few devotees who had come through. I grew up in North Carolina, and there was like a few spirit of my spiritual inspirations that would come regularly. And they were so encouraging to the young people of ISKCON, you know, like just with their glances and their smiles and their nods, they would look, and just a small glance was enough to, like, all the children would be so excited. Wow, you know, this great devotee looked at us and we felt so enthused, and it would make us want to be more determined in our spiritual journey. So, yeah, this is one way we can experience Krishna's glance. So just to summarize, today we talked about the reciprocation, how Krishna reciprocates with his devotees in a unique way while simultaneously interacting with every living entity. So simultaneously and uniquely reciprocating. And then we talked about Krishna's glance, and I'll just briefly repeat the things that we mentioned. So Krishna's glance, it's powerful, it can create the entire creation. It's part of his beauty. It's full of love, laden with love, that was the description. It's filled with compassion and abundant grace. It brings joy to his devotees, and his glance is eternally transformative to our journey. It can change us forever. So never underestimate a brief glance from Krishna or his devotees, because even though it's brief, that's all we need in our life, just 1/11th of a second, right? I forget the Sanskrit, 1/11th of a second. Yeah, lava matra, right? So that, it doesn't even have to be a second, it can be 1/11th of a second, and that can forever change us. So that glance, and we know from the definition from the dictionary that it means a brief and hurried look. But with Krishna, a brief and hurried look is enough to change our trajectory forever. So it's very exciting. And I'd love to just open up and see if there's any questions or comments. Yes, Prabhu.
In Vrindavan, the devotees are always they're chanting their prayers to Srimati Radharani to get her sidelong glance. And so those are very sweet prayers. Because if we please Srimati Radharani, Krishna will automatically be pleased. And I want to share here from, this is a lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave, talking about the glancing. He says, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that when Krishna comes before Radharani, she becomes so much gladdened by seeing the beauty of Krishna that she becomes more beautiful. And as soon as Radharani becomes beautiful, Krishna becomes gladdened, and he becomes more beautiful. So unlimitedly there is competition of becoming more beautiful. That is the state, competition. Because in the spiritual world, everything is unlimited. So unlimitedly, both of them are becoming beautiful, and both of them enjoying unlimitedly. That's from Srimad Bhagavatam, Class 1.2.8, New Vrindavan, September 6, 1972. So right there is, if they're glancing, just by the power of the glance, it increases their beauty. I mean, who could even comprehend that? And then also is that the love of the Vrindavan associates, Rajababa, is intense enough to inspire in them a sense of mindness, a feeling that Krishna is mine. Mamatu buddhi, as distinguished from a sense of thineness, a feeling of I am thine in the paramyovam associates of Vaikuntha. So the difference is that Krishna's mine. He's mine. Radharani's mine. You know, you're intensely attracted compared to, you know, where, oh, yes, he is mine. Or, you know, the mood's different. The thineness and the mindness.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. It reminds me of how the higher you go in spiritual life to the Goloka Vrindavan is very intimate. That mine, I feel like Krishna's mine in the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan. And that amazing description of the beauty and increasing as they glance at each other. Those are really wonderful. Yeah, so when we're chanting japa, we can pray to Krishna to please glance upon us and be merciful to us in that way, because the glance of Krishna is so powerful. Yes.
Thank you so much, Shamanika. So many points during your class led me to many thoughts, but time is less. But in the beginning, you spoke about the limitations of the glances within the material world and the limited mentality that we conditioned souls often have. Oh, so-and-so's getting the mercy, and I'm not. They're nearby, they're getting the glance, and I'm not. And I could resonate with that. And then later when you talked about the glance from, say, Srila Prabhupada, I remember, oh yes, don't worry about all these filthy things over your heart, they're just going to fall off. You know. But to hold on to the sensation or the solace of the essence of that glance, how do we avoid, or how can we more quickly get out from that external comparison or wishing we had the fortune someone else has? Because I don't know about others, but I certainly am very much a conditioned soul in that regard.
Thank you. Yeah, good question. The first thing that comes to mind for me is that we need to reflect on the gifts Krishna has given us. So I find it very helpful I journal, and that helps me to reflect on the ways that Krishna has reciprocated with me or given me gifts in this life. And by focusing on that and really trying to remain grateful for what I have been given, it's sort of like putting on horse blinders, where I no longer need to worry about how Krishna is reciprocating with the others. Like, it's really about what do I have to thank him for, right? There's so much to be thankful for. And that, in that mood of gratitude, it can fill our cup so that we no longer feel deficient just by appreciating. And it can be things that happened in the past. We can keep going over them. Wow, that one devotee encouraged me, or and keep track of them, write them down. So when we're feeling discouraged, like, oh, everyone else seems to be getting so much more mercy than me, we can go take our notebook, go back over the years and remind ourselves, yes, look at how many times Krishna personally cared about me and reciprocated with me and was there in so many different ways. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for coming out here and sharing your wealth. The point was brought up about Krishna is mine. I do recall, I don't know if I was hearing or reading, and from where, I can't say, that Chandravali, her mood is, Krishna is mine. But Radharani's mood is, I am Krishna's. If somebody...
It sounds like the other way around. It's the other way around.
It is? Oh, and where is that from?
I don't know, but Radharani knows she owns Krishna. Chandravali is surrendered to... Radharani is a left-wing yogi, so she's rebellious, but the I am Krishna's is a servitor mood, submissive, almost submissive, right mood, application rather than.
So the correct version is
Radharani's
thinking, Krishna is mine, and Chandravali, I am Krishna's. Okay. All right. Also, from the beginning, I was thinking of this sidelong glance and what the meaning of that is. I just can't relate to it, even as far as what you said. Does anyone else have any realization? What is the sidelong glance? It sounds like if I'm standing in front of Krishna and he gives me a side, he's looking somewhere else.
Yeah, somebody want to share?
Maybe my example is a little bit funny, but I used to look at little Krishna, animation. And in the beginning, he's sitting in front of the mountain, and he's looking at the Vrindavan village and the downs there. And all of a sudden, he turns his head and he looks at you. And you look at that, and you will see Krishna's long glance. Yes, I know. Yeah, he definitively turns his head like that, and he looks at you, and you feel that long glance.
I was thinking, too, when he's looking straight at, like, imagine he's coming home from Calcutta, and his parents are there, all the elders are there, and he's looking at them. But the gopis are standing on the side, yes, he looks. Sneak a sidelong glance, and that's much more intimate.
Yeah.
Because they know Krishna's looking at them, but the parents are thinking, oh no, he's facing us, he's looking at us. He's such a good boy.
It's kind of like a wink, almost like, let me, you know.
Yeah, like a wink, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Krishna likes to do everything indirectly.
Right.
He loves indirect things. And so therefore when he's having a sidelong glance, it actually has so much rasa in there as opposed to directly. Even when his speech is indirectly tells you things, says things. So it has so much more flavor in there than the indirect. I had a question, but it's...
Yeah, thank you for those comments. I was just going to add one more thing and then we'll end for today. But I love that meditation on the sidelong glance. What makes that special? And I know from my own experience, I was describing the experience I had with some great sadhus in my life, great devotees, pure devotees in my life who encouraged me as a child. It was often in a sidelong glance kind of way because they were doing something, and that's what makes a child feel very special too. Like some adult is doing some adult work with somebody, talking to someone, but then they kind of glance over at you and you feel like, oh, but they're thinking about me. Like even though they're doing this kind of mundane task, wow, they're thinking about me, and then you feel so special, right? So it adds to that that intimacy, that special feeling. So thank you all so much. It was wonderful to be here with all of you, and I hope today we can meditate on Krishna's glance upon us and pray for that mercy. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanandi, Hari Bol.